Let's go.
The most energetic, fit, and stress-resilient people on the planet practice daily habits to keep their hormones balanced, their gut healthy, and their muscles and mind strong. Welcome to That Fitness Couple. We're Mike and Corey Beth Lepowski, founders of Pure Physique.
This podcast is designed to provide you with everything we've discovered and continue to discover about nutrition, training, and lifestyle. Today, we all live hectic lives.
So we've made it our mission to make your fitness time efficient and to build you up. Hope you share and enjoy. Let's dive into today's episode.
Let's go.
We're coming at you today with three ways to simplify your nutrition. And before you tune out or hit pause, this is not going to be your conventional stuff. You know, we have heard for years about meal prepping and meal planning and perfectly sized portions and all that stuff. And we're not going to talk about that today. We're going to take it a step deeper. You know, I think a lot of people are still at nutrition 101. We're going to take you deep into nutrition 301. Maybe it's deeper. And maybe you've seen some of this stuff recently at social media. Maybe this is brand new to you today, but I promise it's going to be an episode you get a lot out of. We like to lay the three points out first. That's just how my brain works, right, Mike? I'm your bullet pointer. So let's lay out what these three steps are, and then we're going to deep dive into each one of them. And as always, Mike's going to drop his knowledge bombs, and I'm going to show you as a busy parent, mom, or just person how to make it work. All right, let's go. So number one is to dramatically reduce or stop your consumption of ultra-processed packaged foods. We're going to dive in. We're not talking about white sugar and white flour anymore. We already know that. Number two is to, instead of counting calories, practice intermittent fasting. Practical strategies there. And then the third is to eat more meat and other forms of animal protein, such as whey protein, Greek yogurt, cottage cheese. And I just want to be clear because I spoke to someone yesterday who was like, oh, cheese is inflammatory. We're going to dive into why cheese is actually not inflammatory for everyone. And it has a lot to do with the other garbage you are pairing with the cheese.
I think you're going to free a lot of people with talking about how, you know, cheese is not the worst thing in the world for them.
That's true.
Because a lot of people do out there probably do believe that there are issues tied to it. And maybe for some people, there are some things that they can help. Maybe there's allergies. But I think as we start to go through all of these bullets, we'll start to see that maybe the cheese in and of itself isn't the big problem.
All right. Next time you're going to do the intro. No. And you know what? Well, I think of that movie, Cheese, in moderation, guys.
And what movie is that?
I don't know what movie that was, but we always used to say it in high school. So it's from back then. A lot of people love cheese. And again, we always give you a moderate approach, right? We're never going to have you go super high, super low. I don't know. Let's just dive in here. This is going to be good. Let's go to number one.
Okay.
Number one.
So number one, we are talking about why we want to eliminate, if not, you know, just at the very least, significantly reduce our consumption of these ultra processed packaged foods. And, you know, I think that we have to first acknowledge that all foods to some degree or another are processed. I mean, almost everything has to go through at least some slight processing. And I know that today, you know, processed food gets thrown around and demonized, but really what should be demonized, if anything, is the ultra processed. So this is where you have a lot of foods that are packaged, that are rich in a lot of these seed oils and these vegetable oils, right? These things that are your polyunsaturated omega-6 fatty acids. And I'm just going to use some research here to kind of explain, you know, why we want to avoid some of these things. So first, let's just start off with a clinical trial using diets that were high in soybean oil. And in this, the research showed that subjects who were consuming high amounts of soybean oil were dying of cancer at alarming rates.
Wow.
And they also found gallstones to be associated with high consumption of these soybean oils. That in and of itself, I know, is going to make a lot of people pause, like, hold on one second. If I actually start going through my cabinets and start looking at all of these foods that I'm consuming, so many of them have soybean oil in it. And, you know, maybe in very tiny amounts, it might not be an issue for many people. But here's the challenge, is that today, almost all of your foods have some form of vegetable oil in them. And I think that is the challenge, is that when we actually start to look at these packages and start reading what's on the back of them, we see the soybean oil, the safflower, the sunflower oil, canola oil.
And sometimes it says a blend of safflower, sunflower, and soybean oil, or all three.
Yeah. I mean, you see a lot of this. And so a lot of the issue around those, these omega-6s, is that they are very pro-inflammatory. And a lot of that has been implicated in depression and mood disorders. We see that when people are consuming large amounts of these polyunsaturated fats, that yes, it can lower your total cholesterol, but along with that, you tend to lower your HDLs, not just your LDLs. And that, a lot of the science is pointing to, may be the bigger problem. So in this crusade that, you know, we've been on for decades to lower saturated fat, unfortunately, what's happened is that in trying to lower or eliminate our saturated fat, we've consumed more and more of these polyunsaturated fats, which are being shown to be more detrimental to your heart health than anything else. Because what they do on a cellular level is they destroy your mitochondria. They create this mitochondrial damage or dysfunction. And that leads to a host of problems, including insulin resistance, which you've heard us talk about before in the past. Back in ancestral times, we did not see this amount of polyunsaturated fat in people's diets. In fact, going back just about 100 years ago, there was only 2% linoleic acid in most people's diets, whereas today we're seeing that number climb closer to 10% or 11%. And when we actually look, it's very interesting, when you look at charts that show the consumption of various types of food over the course of the last several decades, you'll notice that even sugar has not increased significantly. However, there has been this addition of these polyunsaturated fats, which were never part of our diet, going back to the early 1900s, all the way up until the early 60s. It just wasn't present. People used to eat butter, cook with tallow, and now we replace that with all of these vegetable oils. And so it's a wonder, with these vegetable oils being in every packaged food and us feeding ourselves and our children a lot of these packaged foods, that we have been seeing a doubling and tripling of obesity year over year. And in fact, just in the last 2 years alone, we've watched child obesity climb from 30% to 40%. Wow. So if those are not some statistics that would make you just give pause the next time you go for the easy option, the packaged food, or to just, you know, rip that bag of chips open. I mean, this should be it, because we are accumulating these polyunsaturated fats in our cells like never in history before.
Well, and I think that they're hidden in places that you wouldn't even think. I mean, we recently did a challenge at our gym studios, and it was like a seed oil removal challenge. And people were like, oh my gosh, it's in everything. It's in all the healthy snacks. It's in all the quote unquote health foods. So I'm like, oh my gosh, were we just better off eating like Bugles back in the day than we are eating veggie sticks and all these like fake healthy foods? Probably both are bad. But I think what was so fascinating to me is the almonds that I picked up. I'm like, okay, I'm eating almonds, you know. Oh, I flipped the packaging over and I'm like, safflower oil. This is unbelievable. You know, it's even hidden in the quote unquote, like natural whole foods. And so to your point, it's everywhere. And we didn't kind of discuss this, but why? Why is it everywhere? Is it just cheap?
Yeah. I mean, that by and large is the number one reason. If we start going down this rabbit hole, we will be called government conspiracy theorists. I mean, I think you already are called that oftentimes. But
I'm gonna go get my tinfoil hat.
But it's the truth. There is a lot of money. There's a lot of lobbying. There's a lot of ego that result in us adding these things in. And when I say ego, what I mean is people with their own agendas to, you know, push their beliefs, that got into the government somehow. And because of that, I mean, this is going back to a story about Ansel Keys. We will reserve that for another time. That is a very long story, but one definitely worth looking into. But you start to realize that there has been a lot of faulty science that we have followed for decades. And let's just be honest, if you're wrong, oftentimes for most people, especially a government, it's really hard to admit, everyone, that you've been wrong. And especially when it's been carried out, this wrong information has been disseminated for decades. So you talk about, again, ego, you talk about the money behind all of it and all these vested interests. That's often the reason why we are where we are today.
I mean, that's not a conspiracy. That's just facts. And I probably think that our listeners would agree with that. But the other thing that I just quickly will tangent with is I know when people come to us and say, I can't eat red meat because of my cholesterol, you know, we don't take anything for face value. Maybe that's why it's so hard to raise our kids sometimes because they see us. But we actually went back. Do you guys know the American Heart Association removed their recommendation that red meat caused an increase in bad cholesterol back in 2015? 7 years ago, they took that out of the recommendations. But if you were a cardiologist or you go to a cardiologist that went to school prior to that, you know, there's some people that keep up with their education and kudos to them and us. But then there's other people that they just go. And there's cardiologists repeating that faulty information. It's not true. And so I think that that's just a great example of the fact that lies get perpetuated. I think your mom says it best, Mike, follow the money.
Follow the money.
Just follow the money.
You know, this obviously was not planned, but I just happen to have in my hand right now, it was sitting here on the desk.
Now you know how much research Mike does.
Is a study that I downloaded just yesterday. I was going to save this for another episode. I probably will and go into it in more detail. But I think to just give all of you out there, the overarching result of this is fascinating. So this was published in Nature Medicine just this past October. And the title of the paper is Health Effects Associated with Consumption of Unprocessed Red Meat, a Burden of Proof Study. And what they sought to do in this meta-analysis is to take all of the studies that have been done on this topic of red meat consumption and how it affects six specific outcomes. So the ones that they looked at here were colorectal cancer, breast cancer, type 2 diabetes, ischemic heart disease, ischemic stroke, and hemorrhagic stroke. So those are the things, it examined the research on those six outcomes and consumption of red meat. And you want to know what the outcome was?
Tell us.
We found weak evidence of association between red meat consumption and all of these outcomes. I paraphrase there, but basically what they said is that the percentages that tried to tie consumption of red meat to the incidence of these particular health outcomes is almost non-existent. And when I say non-existent, I went through the percentages of each one. One of them had 6% chance, another one, 2%. And then the remainder of them were 1% and 1%. I mean, just let that sink in for a moment.
You know, so there's a 1% correlation between eating red meat and having one of these adverse health effects.
Correct.
Wow.
Correct. So on average, it worked out to about 2.5% chance. And the only way to lower the incidence was to have absolutely 0 grams. But there is so much more tied to this that we're not going to get into now. It has to do with healthy user biases and a number of other factors. But I just thought that with you bringing it up, it was just an opportune time to make mention that, hey guys, the information, the science is getting out there that you do not need to be overly concerned with consumption of cholesterol and saturated fat and red meat because it's completely unfounded. So anyway, we'll save that for another day.
A good friend of ours who's very much into holistic health, and she's done a great job, honestly, with clients in her practice and her micro farm. She says, don't follow the science, follow the math. And I think that's what you've just provided us here with, Mike. We actually follow the math and we're like, wait a second, that doesn't add up. So back in the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, we were eating red meat and butter. People were in a lot better shape back then, were they not? Before we introduced all these cauliflower this and veggie this and veggie, I mean, it's unbelievable.
That's what's interesting is that as with the advent of more and more quote unquote healthy foods, healthy snacks, different renditions or healthier renditions of these things that we have said are not healthy for us. Well, what's happened? We've continued to get fatter.
Sicker and fatter.
Sicker and fatter.
Great.
And unfortunately, same for our kids.
Damn.
Not our kids, but yeah. Kids in general.
Our kids were eating steak last night.
Love it.
All right. So good. That was just tip number one of our three. The other two are not going to be as long. So sit tight with us. I know you're not going anywhere. But number two is, instead of calorie counting, right? Don't count calories. Actually practice intermittent fasting. And this has been a big one for us now for 5.5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there's two ways that you can look at this. I mean, there are those who say, oh, you know, there's nothing special about intermittent fasting. It just causes you to consume fewer calories. Well, if that's the best that it does, then that's still pretty good because people tend to overconsume in the first place. So if we are using this as a means of not having to break open MyFitnessPal or the good old journal and track every morsel of food that we're eating, and put ourselves in a position to consume a fewer or more appropriate amount of calories without trying, to me, I think that's a good thing. But the other aspect of this, which I know we've spoken about before, is the hormonal component of intermittent fasting and what we get from that. So we've talked in the past about how it helps to lower our insulin levels. And then with lower insulin levels and proper dietary choices, we can raise our glucagon levels, right? And that's going to help us to burn more body fat. But there's a host of other things that happen as well with regards to our hunger signals. And one of the things that does tend to happen with a lot of people who practice intermittent fasting is that it does lower their appetite over time, which, yes, in turn, they're not going to overconsume as many calories. So that's not such a bad thing.
I agree with that. Well, we've been using intermittent fasting now, which I'll be honest, I don't think you were fully on board with it in the beginning. But we always say we will never recommend anything without trying it ourselves. We always have to be our own case study or beta test before we go and bring things to you guys. But with it, the biggest things that I personally noticed were my energy was better. You know, I felt better. And quite frankly, I made better choices. You know, I didn't have the dips and the highs of blood sugar. And I think for you, we no longer call you Hangry Mike.
That's true. That's true. I am no longer hangry. Rarely am I ever just hungry in general. I mean, eating is never a problem, but...
Yeah, I agree. Well, and with that, you know, here's just our practical. So tip number two, instead of counting calories, practice intermittent fasting. We recommend people starting with like a 12-12 window. I think people think like, oh my gosh, I only have like an hour to eat all day. No, like don't get yourself all crazy. Start with 12-12. Guess what? You're sleeping pretty much for majority of the 12 hours that you're fasting, you know, and give it a shot and start to maybe minimize your eating window by 30 minutes and then try it by an hour. See how it goes for you. When we see people get thrown in and they go right to like a very small window, of course, that's going to be difficult. You know, your body always wants to find balance or homeostasis. And so to be able to slowly baby step your way and inch your way into intermittent fasting, we've seen it very effective, I would say, for about 99% of people that we have suggested it to, including ourselves. So it's a good one.
So that's a great place to start is with the 12-12. If you are the person who is accustomed to getting up first thing in the morning and eating something or feel like you need to, great place to start. It just means that you might be getting up and delaying your first meal of the day, or it may mean that you're just ending a little bit sooner. But I think ultimately, you know, one of the best practices around intermittent fasting on a more daily schedule is trying to move towards that 16-8 window, whereas you are fasting for 16 hours and then you are feasting for 8. And I really want to put an emphasis on that word feasting, that the whole purpose of this is not to try to undereat. That's what you're trying to do now if you are following the Weight Watchers method or you are counting your calories and your macros, right? You are being very intentional about undereating. Whereas when you're following this, your body will dictate how much you need and how much of it you need. And that is also one of the great hormonal benefits of following intermittent fasting for a period of time. And I say a period of time because, you know, you may not need to keep up with it forever. Some people really enjoy that. It works with their lifestyle. I know for us, we sort of fall into that category where we typically do not eat until closer to lunchtime. And then we try to end around 7 p.m. or 8 p.m. in the evening at the latest. And it just works with our schedule. We're not getting bogged down by time. We're not having to take that time out from work or disrupt our flow just to go get something to eat. So if you can get yourself closer to that 16-8 window, that's ideal. But the truth is that there are so many different forms of intermittent fasting that can include you eating you know, at all times of the day, but you just might be consuming fewer calories on one day and a lot more on another. But we won't get into all the details of that right now. But the point is this, that if you start to put this into practice, we guarantee that it's almost going to automatically help you get better control over your food consumption.
Heck yes. Intermittent fasting for people with cravings. That was my biggest takeaway. All right. Well, number three is to eat more meat and other forms of animal protein. We already know from tip number one why we do not need to demonize this anymore. It's largely unfounded. Whey protein, Greek yogurt, cottage cheese. And yes, we're even going to give a little pass on cheese because, again, eaten by itself, there is less of an inflammatory effect, regardless of what you might see on a Netflix documentary. So lead us in, Mike.
All right. So again, a lot of the challenges around, you know, certain foods is that when these foods are being studied, I mean, we have to really just take a look at the totality of what an individual is doing. And that is oftentimes a lot of the problems that we run into with a lot of nutritional-based studies is that it's really, really hard to isolate factors. And when you get to understand how many of these studies are done, you'll start to realize that, wow, they're not really reliable because they basically are asking people, hey, just please fill out this form or keep track of what you're eating for a month and report back. And so you don't know how much truth is behind what somebody is saying. But aside from that, you have to look at what are the other things that they're doing. So if we are following a diet that is largely high in these processed foods or has a lot of added sugar in it, well, that's going to result in insulin resistance, which we know is probably the linchpin in a lot of the hormonal problems that people have and a lot of health issues that they have as well.
Well, I'm going to dive in here on the cheese, because what do people eat with cheese? Nachos and cheese and crackers, grilled cheese sandwich. You know, we are rarely eating cheese by itself. And so that's a great self-test for yourself, is just eat some cheese and see what happens. As soon as you're partnering it up with the Ritz crackers or the Cheez-Its or the Tostitos chips or whatever else you're eating it with, well, hello, bloating and not feeling as good. You know, we too often correlate our symptoms with the thing we think it might be, but it's usually not that thing. And in this case, the cheese, it's typically the other thing that you hadn't even considered.
Yeah, that is an excellent point and probably a much cleaner and easier way to describe where I was going with that, which is, yes, when we are eating a lot of these processed foods that cause these rises and these drops in our insulin, and then we're adding fat into the equation in the form of the cheese or any other fat, I mean, that is largely what causes a lot of these, you know, these numbers that we target for heart health, right? Our triglycerides, our LDLs, our HDLs. And again, to be truthful, like, LDLs are not a good measure. Triglycerides are probably our best measure right now. Having high HDLs is a great thing, but having low HDLs is not. And focusing on the insulin resistance piece of this puzzle is probably the biggest thing to influence that. So the encouragement here is to not be afraid of proteins. And, you know, even if they're coming in the form of dairy, and we understand that some people will have a dairy allergen of some type, and that just might mean that, no, maybe you shouldn't be the person consuming the cottage cheese and the cheese itself or the Greek yogurt, but it still doesn't mean you cannot or should not consume a large amount of animal protein.
Well, eggs. You can still have eggs, you know?
Absolutely.
That's pretty simple.
But the reason why we really want people consuming a higher amount of these animal proteins in general is that, number one, they come with a complete amino acid profile, which means you are getting all the essential amino acids that your body needs for proper function.
So wait. So does that mean we don't need to drink aminos?
No, you do not need to drink amino acids. I mean, I know a lot of people like to, but really it's nothing more than expensive, you know, flavoring for your water.
So eat more meat.
Just eat more meat and you're going to get more than enough of all the essential amino acids that you could possibly handle.
I think if people walk away with that, they'll have more budget in their Christmas shopping. So there you go.
You're welcome. But, you know, we have talked in the past too about all of the positive benefits that are associated with protein and making sure that we are getting sufficient amounts of it. So, you know, whether we're talking about trying to help curb some of your hunger as well, you know, we gave you intermittent fasting, but also protein plays into that largely as well. I mean, this is, you know, protein does help with a lot of the regulating the hunger signals. that oftentimes will lead to people overeating. So if you consume more protein, basically what winds up happening is you are less likely to overconsume. Now consider this, if you want a practical approach to this, next time you're feeling hungry, sit down with your steak, your ground beef, an omelet. I mean, go for it for this animal protein and just keep eating it until you feel full. And then tell me if you still have a desire to eat the carbohydrates along with it. Chances are you're not. But the crazy thing is, I mean, I know you're sitting there probably saying like, oh, I don't know, how much protein are you talking about, Mike? Just until you don't like the taste of it. And it's interesting what happens is that when we measure out how much protein that actually is, you'll be shocked to know that it's probably not that much. I mean, it's not a large volume of food. And that is one of the primary benefits of leading with protein in your diet or at each meal.
That's so good. Well, and I think the last important point to make here on animal proteins is this. Quality does matter. We don't want you just strolling into your neighborhood supermarket and picking up, you know, the cheapest or, I mean, I hate to say it, but like, I won't buy store brand, you know, like maybe someone can tell me like, no, you're wrong there. But it's just, it's big. It's probably loaded up with hormones and stuff like that. And so we will look for grass-fed, grass-finished. When it comes to eggs, I will try cage-free, but more importantly, pasture-raised. Sorry, not cage-free, free-range. We always get free range, but I really do look for that pasture raised, learning that the chickens have, you know, actual space outside to hang out and get some vitamin D from the sun, because that's really good for you too. So look at the quality as well, you know, see where it's coming from. If you could even find a local farmer, we're in that process right now where we're going to purchase a nice cow with another family. And, you know, that's a very economical and realistic way for you to implement this.
Can I respectfully play devil's advocate for a moment?
No.
Oh, come on. Okay, I am. Just for those people who might be out there saying, well, no, I do look at the, you know, the grass-fed and all that, but it's just so much more expensive. So let's just look at it this way, though. Number one, you can improve your budget by consuming fewer of all of those packaged foods that are filled with all of those vegetables and seed oils that we want to get rid of, right? So that's going to save you a little bit of money there. But if you're still in that position where it's like, hey, I need to feed more people in my household, right? I can't be that person who's going for the most expensive meat. Totally understand. But here's what you need to know is that in the absence of all of those other things that we discussed earlier, the absence of all the added sugars, the artificial stuff that is in these packaged foods, the seed oils, in the absence of that, if you had to consume meat that might not be the most ideal, you are still doing better for your body than without it, basically. You want to have that meat, and even if it's not the best, your body is still going to be in a better state to accept those nutrients. And, you know, if we're talking about ruminant animals like a cow, right? If we are talking about red meat, then at least the good part is that cow can actually help break some of the toxins down, maybe from the grains or the plants that it's eating. And instead, you're not going to get that passed on to you through that meat, or at least not to the same degree that, you know, if you were doing that along with all of the other things that we've been trying to talk to you about through this podcast today.
That's good. I'll always let you play devil's advocate. You know, I was like, what is he going to say here? Yeah, listen, I mean, I do notice the difference in taste and flavor when we get, you know, local eggs versus getting them at the supermarket. And of course, I prefer it. I think feel better doing it. I know they got a little bit more vitamins in it. So listen, we have to do the best that we can. And that definitely is some great information and a totally valid point. And here's the last point I'll make. The kids were asking for Annie's cheesy smiles from our local supermarket. And I'm looking at this bag of like, it's like Cheez-Its, not Cheez-Its, puff cheese. What are those things called?
Cheetos?
Maybe.
Cheese
but like,
puffs?
Thank you, cheese puffs, but like healthy cheese puffs. And I'm looking at this bag and I'm like, $10? $10. And I could go get a piece of sirloin steak, you know? Like, and so that really is what Mike's pointing to and flipping our thinking. You will be shocked if you actually itemize your grocery bill on how much junk we consume and purchase without even realizing it, you know? So I think it's a great time, especially as we approach the new year, take inventory, see really where your finances are going, because we're not asking you to break the bank here, but really take inventory of where your money is going. I mean, you're voting with that. Every time that you shop, you vote. You're voting for more seed oils or less seed oils. If we took one day as a country and we didn't buy foods with seed oils, like, it would completely disrupt the food industry, you know? So just think, every time you do make that purchase, you are voting with your dollars. And of course, I do like to support local as much as we can. And that's where I want our voting dollars to go. So with that, we hope that these three tips were incredibly helpful for you. Again, just to recap for the bullet pointers out there like me, dramatically reduce or stop consumption of ultra processed packaged foods. We know about white sugar, white flour. Now we know about seed oils. Tip number two, instead of counting calories, practice intermittent fasting. Might give you some really, really easy, simple tips and a goal. And then eat more meat and other forms of animal protein like whey protein, Greek yogurt, cottage cheese, and yes, even cheese on its own is awesome. So we are sending you all of our goodness, all of our love. Guys, here is to your health and an awesome day. Hey guys, thanks for joining us. We're trying to do our part to build people up and take the overwhelm and confusion out of exercise and nutrition so people and their families can live fuller lives.
We've got an entirely free coaching course for you over at purephysique.com. So head over and share it with your friends.
And because we do the show entirely free and without sponsors, we'd super appreciate it if you would leave us a 5-star review, share this podcast with friends and on social, and be sure to tag us.
We'd love to know what you discovered today and how this information impacts you. Let's go.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. Yeah.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.